my perspective is that we've all been wounded. You know, you to me come across as a very healthy, compassionate human male. I just get that vibe from you. Okay. And then you tell me, yeah, you had some, you know, we've all had. And I think we're here to, there's a creative aspect, okay? There's where creativity is involved, because to take those wounds, it's an alchemical process to take those very wounds and turn them into gold.
Good day, listeners. You are listening to the Spiritual Artist Podcast. This is CJ Miller, your host. It is a warm day here in Dallas. Spring is coming perhaps a little early since it's only February 1st. I have a neat guest that I'm excited to share with you today. And we are going to talk about trauma, focus on trauma. But let me introduce Dr. Don St. John. He is a psychotherapist, a continuum consciousness teacher, and the author of the award-winning book, Healing the Wounds of Childhood, and the revised edition, Healing the Wounds of Childhood and Culture. He has been engaging the four pillars of wholeness, I love that, for almost 60 years, the somatic, the psycho-emotional, the relational, and the spiritual. I love that holistic looking at things. Good morning, Don. How are you today?
Good. Very good. I'm excited to be here. Looking forward to our conversation.
I am too. You know, I am one of those, I call them a lifelong learner. And I love books. I love reading new methodologies. And so we put this out about a month or so, 6 weeks ago. I talked to you first because I had to get your book, and I have plowed through it. And in my normal fashion, highlighting and bookmarking things of interest, things that I need to research further. This is an incredible, it's a lifelong piece of work, really. It shows that you have in used so many different methodologies, and I love it. So there's so many things here I have to look at. The one thing that interests me, and we're not even going to talk about it this podcast, is the Rolfing, R-O-L-F-I-N-G. Maybe a next podcast. But
okay.
So what I wanted to start with you, Dawn, on and tell you why I wanted to have you on this show. I don't know if you're aware of this, but as a spiritual artist, what I focus on is what I call the spiritual aspect of people and how it affects their art. So I would consider the spiritual aspect of someone their consciousness. And so a lot of times I see so many people struggling, and they're trying to learn how to hold a pen or use a brush, or they want to learn the technical physical things. And that's all valid. And I do workshops and teach that. But I like to teach them about how to go back and be more self-aware. Because it's our consciousness that we take into the art studio.
I agree. I think it's our consciousness that gets reflected in our work.
Right.
In art of any kind, whether it's a movement art or painting or writing. I think it's our consciousness that we're revealing.
Right. And so I think for me, what I want to share, I had a retreat in the fall, and I've started doing public speaking, and I do an exercise. And I want to share that with you because it really ties into your book. And listeners, if you're watching this on YouTube, you can see the cover of the book here right now. What it really talks about when I do these retreats and speaking engagements, sometimes I do a little, not an official regression, but I have people close their eyes and I have them go back as an artist to their very first experience as an artist. And I have them focus on how was it received? You know, like did your mother brag about it, or did your father laugh at it? Did, you know what I mean? Did they hang it on the fridge, or did they make a mockery of it? Because to me, that sets the tone for how you view art for the rest of your life.
Yeah, it can make a big difference. I'm wondering if you drew any conclusions from the data that you gathered in that exercise.
It's interesting. You know, I think a lot of people, just by bringing it up, making them more aware to even notice it. You know, I think you talk here about how there's coping mechanisms, a child solution, it says construction of an image. and how we as children, we learn to cope and hide those experiences. So what I wanted to share with the listeners, when I was reading this, you don't really go into it very much, but I could sense that you really did have a very traumatic childhood, you know?
Quite, yes. Yes. Beginning at birth, I almost died in the birthing process. The cord was wrapped around my neck. My mother said that it was the consummate skill of the obstetrician that saved my life. And then as I jokingly, not so jokingly, say, then my life got worse from there, you know?
Well, it sounds like it was rough. I mean,
it was rough. It was very rough. Yeah.
And a lot from your parents. I mean, I don't know if you feel comfortable sharing that with the listeners, but it sounds like they were verbally and physically, let's just say, aggressive.
You know? That's a euphemism, Chris. Aggressive. They were, well, hers was by, you know, commission. I mean, she beat me, you know, she'd swing, she'd come at me with wooden spoons and like that, enraged. I mean, you know, when you're 4 years old and a big person is charging you enraged, that's pretty terrifying. My father, on the other hand, was almost non-existent. He was critical. He was sarcastic, but he didn't engage much, you know. I mean, the psychology gets very complicated, and you know, I don't want to bore your listeners with the psychodynamics of that configuration. Suffice it to say that it was, you know, my best response was to freeze and live in my fantasy world, you know. So thank God somewhere along the line, very early on, I recognized, however vaguely, I recognized that I needed healing and began, again, about 60 years ago, a path that continues to this day.
Yeah. Well, like I said before we logged in on this call, this book is definitely shows so much experience and insight into trauma and how it affects you and different ways and different methodologies to approach that trauma.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's why it's a very worthwhile book, because of that very fact. It shows you numerous ways to approach it, and it has to be approached, you know, especially if the trauma is severe. It affects the entire being, you know. It affects our very tissues of our body, not just the brain and nervous system, but our very tissues, our muscles, connective tissue. It affects our ability to relate to each other, to receive love, to love. You know, our capacity to love is profoundly affected by trauma, you know, by the wounds.
Well, I wanted to say first, I'm sorry that you had to go through that.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris. Yeah.
I am sorry that I feel like I had challenges as a child. It was more, I would call passive aggressive, you know, like hidden a little more, not so physical. It's still different. It's, you know, so what do you think did make you realize you needed to change? I mean, I don't know if some people ever do. Some people just block it down and never, ever approach it. But what do you remember at all? What triggered you to start going, hey, well, I need help here.
I'd like to answer that question in two ways. One is to say, see, my perspective is that we've all been wounded. You know, you, to me, come across as a very healthy, compassionate human male. I just get that vibe from you, okay? And then you tell me, yeah, you had some, you know, we've all had. And I think we're here to, there's a creative aspect, okay? There's where creativity is involved, because to take those wounds, it's an alchemical process to take those very wounds and turn them into gold. Okay? Turn them into gold. Let me give you an example. Let's say a male has a sexual issue based on trauma in his life with his mother or father. And, you know, he's not confident going into a sexual relationship. Well, one way of turning it into gold is to develop the ability that's rare, you know, even in the healthiest men, to communicate at that level of vulnerability to his partner. And if he can master that, then, you know, sexuality becomes a whole new arena of depth and pleasure and connection. Can be wonderful. It's that transmutation, if you will, of that wound into a strength, into gold. So that's the first thing I want to say in answer to your question. The second, for me, it was rather dramatic. I was 20, 21 years old. I was in the Air Force. I had broken up a relationship the year before, and I was drinking wildly. And one morning I woke up, I was in the back seat of my car. We'd been drinking since 5 o'clock the previous evening, and somewhere around 10 or 11, we went to a club, and I was hollering and hooping and, you know, just creating a riot, and burst some blood vessels in my throat. And I woke up and I'm bleeding out of my mouth, you know, and that's a 20-year-old kid who has no medical experience. That was pretty frightening. And a little voice in my head said, "You need help. You need help." And that was the first, you know, that I took that first step, went to the Yellow Pages, found a psychiatrist who worked on Saturdays. And it's been ongoing ever since. You know, I didn't realize just how badly wounded I was. I had no idea, because, you know, kids assume that what they're living is normal.
Right.
That the stuff that's coming at them, the criticism, the beatings, whatever, is their own fault. You know, they tend to assume it's their deficiency. You know, they're just not lovable, not good enough. And that's part of the deep wounding, you know, well, to go through life.
What I love about your story is you said, and I encourage this as an artist, but as a human, you said that you heard this voice, you know, you, and so I would say, and I'm real big on this. I even have these wristbands that say, "Listen," you know, I don't know if you read it. And it's a reminder to me to all day long when something happens, because we get so reactive, is to stop and listen, just listen. And so you did listen to that voice.
I did. Thank God. Thank God. And that's you know, you wanted to know, like, what do you do about it? And learning to listen is one of the things you do about it. There are many, but that's a big one, you know, to listen to that voice. There have been a number of occasions where I made a choice that on the surface seemed completely irrational. Just made no sense, but the voice was loud, and I trusted it on those occasions. And, you know, within months, the clarity was—it was obvious that I made a very wise choice. You know, and also listening to other people, as in general, you know, it's an art form, and we assume that if our ears are working, We listen all the time when somebody talks to us, right?
I know, right, right. It's not the case, though.
No. But it can go a long way to further the quality of your connections, of your relationships, if you really make that, you know, one of your art forms. You know, it's a, what's this person really saying to me?
Yeah, I love how you phrase that. Listening is an art form. It is an art form. And I think what I find is so many people are so busy expressing that they don't stop a minute and just listen to what's sitting across from them, right? They're just so busy telling their story. But sometimes when you listen to someone else's story, it can shift you so much, you know?
Yeah, it can. It can. Yeah.
So you got all the way to in your 20s before you really sat down and said, oh, I got to unpack this life that I've had.
You know? Yeah, God. And I feel very, very fortunate that I was that young in my early 20s to take that first step that never stopped. You know, to this day, you know, I engage practices that are healing. No, at first I thought it was all in my head, and you know, psychotherapy is the solution. And after several years, I realized that, wow, you have to address the body. I mean, they're not separate. They're not separate. As our relationships, we have to develop, you know, we have to focus on relationship capacities. Now, listening is one. You know, there are people, really, Chris, who just can't listen. As soon as the other starts talking, they're formulating their response in their head. They're not there. They're not listening. They're talking inside their head, preparing what's going to come out their mouth, you know?
Yeah, I do know. I found that it's so funny. Even as I do a podcast, there's a part of me that wants to control where it goes. And then there's a part of me that says, just listen, just listen and let it go where it needs to go. You know, right? It's and you know, you're bringing up the body and how we store trauma in the body, which is a very big new issue for me that I explore. I actually went back and added a chapter into the book a year after it was published about the body, because there's, I think the body can, not only does it hold trauma, but I think it can also heal trauma, you know, through movement, through yoga, through stretching. You can actually move, I think, and I don't know if you would agree with this or not, but I think you can move your mind by just moving your body almost.
Yeah, you know what it is? I'll say that another way. First of all, I totally agree. You know, I completely agree with you. And it's that we get, and it's not, see, here's the thing. It's not just obvious trauma. It's also all, it includes the ideology of a culture. Okay, the belief systems of a culture that allow X, Y, Z and disallow EDF, okay? The things that get disallowed, we obey those injunctions by tightening up our bodies, restricting our bodies so that the movements involved, let me give you an example. Let's say it's self-assertion, right? Let's just, you know, okay, self-assertion. If the culture says you don't do it, you stay very quiet. If somebody insults you, okay, just get quiet. You obey that by, you know, because the obvious natural reaction is to, you know, respond with strength, right? A little kid, you can see it. But to obey that, we got to tighten the muscles. And over time, they stay that way. And so even if we get it in our head, it's okay to be self-assertive. it's hard because the movements required are restricted within the organism. Does that make sense?
It does. You're starting to bring in some of that rolfing that I mentioned, which is fascinating. You know, it is fascinating. That's a later chapter in the book. I'd encourage listeners to read to the end. But yeah. It's in how they can actually do certain techniques of movement and with the body.
Yeah.
To release that.
Yeah. To help that process of having all our freedom.
Yeah,
I mean, in a sense, isn't that what we want?
Yeah.
To feel free, you know?
So you said a couple things there. I'd like to pick them up. I love that you shared that concept because so many people don't even think that way. When I went through my training as a spiritual coach, we do go through a process where they talk about looking at your societal norms. They called it race consciousness, not in difference of races, but where you are, like your national consciousness. And a lot of people don't pay attention to that. You know, we just assume that the things that we're taught, like men should not wear, you know, when I was a kid, men don't wear pink, right? I mean, that was just right. What you heard. Men don't wear pink. And then you go to another culture and you might find that the men only wear pink.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Being able to separate yourself and stand back and watch. So I would say watching things and so not just listening, but going, well, is that true? You know, I love that question. Is that true? Is it true that men shouldn't wear pink? You know?
Yeah.
I love that you brought that up. And that's a very rich level of self-awareness, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, I subtitled that book, An Adventure of a Lifetime, you know, because I see it now as an adventure, you know, not as a poor me, I've got these wounds, you know, but it's an adventure of discovery, an adventure of challenges. On any good adventure, you're going to encounter challenges, whether it's the weather or the terrain or whatever it is. Any good adventure is going to have its moments, at least, of challenge, surprises, and moments of awe. Like you go around the corner on the trail, and all of a sudden, there's a view that's so spectacular that it takes your breath away for a moment. It's like, right?
Right.
So that's an adventure.
It is an adventure. And, you know, I think everything that happens to us, I love to point out to people that there is a lesson. There's a gift in everything, right? And even in the childhood and the parents that you had, there was a gift because it made you, it really pushed you out of that bubble, didn't it? You know?
Oh, listen.
Quite literally, maybe.
I agree. And there's something to be addressed in that.
Yeah. But
again, first, I agree because look, I'm having this moment right now, right? Talking to you, never met you. We've had some email communication and I'm feeling delighted. Like, this is really fun. I can see you're aware, awake, interested. And, you know, I'm having this moment because of everything that came before. If I had a more quote-unquote normal childhood, who knows what that would have been like, you know? I might have been working in a bank, making a lot of money, maybe. But now, it's tricky here because you can't say that to somebody quickly. You know, wow, what a gift you got. Oh, your father punched you in the jaw, broke it a few times. Hey, were you lucky? Yeah, no. Empathy is definitely what's called for there. Right. However, when that person reaches a certain level of consciousness, when there's a certain development that can look back with utter gratitude, you know, It's like, because that was, that's what I got dealt. But look at what I've made from it. Look at what I've done with it. And, you know, in my case, see, part of my message is for this, if I could do it, if I could do it, anyone can do it, you know?
Right.
And it's like, you know, what are you waiting for, folks? The information's out there. The resources are out there, you know?
Yeah. I love that. I agree. It's not something, you know, if so, you can say to someone right away, or ever sometimes. But that's what I mean. I can see that you've reached a certain level. And when you say an adventure of a lifetime, you can tell that this book is like a looking back on all those wonderful lessons and putting them all in one book. I mean, you know, there's all these different things that you can, this is really full of information. It's a nice book. And so that, and I love what you just said about gratitude, you know, getting to a point of gratitude is a healing modality, isn't it? You know, being grateful.
Yeah, that's a marker, you know, when you get to the point of gratitude, caveat without denying the pain. You know, you can't, there's something called spiritual, oh, what's that phrase?
Where some you people jump. Spiritual bypass?
Yeah.
Have you heard that?
Yeah, that's what I was looking for.
I know that one. So
Good. Spiritual bypassing, you know? You can't jump over it. But you can face it and get to that gratitude. That's you're doing the work.
Yeah, and you have to feel it. You know, I mean, you really have to let yourself feel it completely. And sometimes it takes years and years of feeling it, you know, I think, you know?
Yeah, in different ways. Yeah.
I do think as I've gotten older, I've gotten better at moving through that process. You know, you can't skip it, but you can maybe move it a little faster.
Oh, yeah. Which is a good argument for engaging the body. Because if you can get fluid in the body, if you can, you know, release the compressions and the constrictions and restrictions, you know, you can move through situations faster. You become more resilient, you know.
So what do you do? What are your practices with your body specifically, to move
with
you
my
through.
Body specifically, yeah. My main practice, and I teach this, is continuum. Continuum, I call it continuum consciousness. Sometimes I refer to it as a system of fluid movement explorations. See, the body by volume is approximately 70% water, liquid, right? And some 65 years ago, a woman by the name of Emily Conrad, who was a dancer, asked the question, if the body is, you know, so has so much liquid, how does it move? How does water move? And she realized it doesn't move the way most human beings move. Okay? And so she began this exploration. Became her life work. I was fortunate enough to encounter it many years ago, and at various levels, I've been practicing it recently quite a bit. As you know, I'm in my 80s now, and I'm teaching fluid movement. I got a bunch of 40-year-olds, 35-year-olds,
youngins,
teaching them how to move fluidly. You know, it's a yeah, I get a little prideful about it, I have to admit. I need to let that go.
Yeah. But, don't connect to it too close.
don't get too haughty about it. You know, as I like to say, the gods of irony have a wicked sense of humor.
They do. So is it like I do yin. I did yin yoga, and it's more of a stretch and hold, and it's not So are you actually standing mostly? Or
No, all kinds of things. And even that, our relationship to gravity, we could be, you know, we could be on a chair, lying down across the chair, often on the floor, sitting in a chair. And it's usually extremely slow movement, except when it's not. And it's an effort or an intention to bring our consciousness to the inside of the body. So, you know, I can move my shoulder girdle here. I don't know if you can see it. I can move it back and forth. And, you know, I can do that very smoothly now. It's the movement is quite smooth. And that's one level of it. But when I'm practicing, I'm attempting to go in the inside between the front and the back and feel the sloshing of fluids on the inside of that girdle.
Okay? Oh, interesting. I've never thought of it that way.
Yeah. Yin yoga is great. And I've done yin yoga. I like it. I mean, there's so much out there that can support people really connecting to themselves in a whole bodily way.
You know what I loved that I think a lot of people aren't aware of, that I wasn't aware of most of my life, is when you said projecting your consciousness into your body. Most people listening to this are going, what are you talking about? You know, like, what are you talking about?
Right.
And I feel that we have done, I love this. It's called a 61 points of light in yoga, where you visualize. So I would tell a listener to visualize like a white glowing space between your eyes. And then you move that visualization. So what you're doing is you're putting your thoughts, your consciousness, you're directing it into the key points of your body. You know, she'll go through each tip, fingertip, fingertip, fingertip. And I have the most crazy ADHD monkey mind, you know, and it slows me down and it makes me present, right?
Make you present. Exactly. That's what it's about. You see, the more trauma, the more difficult it is to be fully present, because we're literally in the past.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
You know, we're holding on to something, you know, from the past. We've configured to protect ourselves from the wounds we were feeling in the past. So to fully get here, you see, I could ask you, could you feel a difference before you start that visualization of the light and when you finish?
Oh, yeah.
Do you feel that difference?
Oh, definitely.
And you refer to that difference as presence.
Right, right.
And that's what it's about, to become more and more present in our lives.
I like the idea. What I think is like sort of when you say you're in your past or whatever, I think it's like watching old, it's like you're watching old movies, you know?
Right.
You know, exactly. That projector is going and it's showing, you know, when my father shamed me when I was doing art, right? It's just that projector just going and going.
Exactly.
And instead of being in the moment where I am right now, where I'm in a safe environment, I'm still playing that. And sometimes I would even say, I don't know if trauma applies to this, but you can be in the future. You can be in a projector presenting something that's in the future that might never happen, you know?
Exactly. Right.
And so I love that
in the presence.
In the presence. And my son has trouble. And I think a lot of people today have trouble sleeping, right? There's so much going on with social media and media. And I told him, I said, look, when you wake up in the middle of the night, try this exercise where you just project your consciousness into the parts of your body. And because you're so busy going through the parts of your body, it will quiet that mind. And so I tell the listeners, this is a great thing to do in the middle of the night. You know, when you wake up and you're worried about the bill in the future or something someone said to you 2 days ago, you're still replaying what your boss said to you. How dare she say that? How dare she say that to me? Right.
Yep.
So that's a wonderful thing. Do you teach that like several days a week or?
No, you know, before the pandemic, I had decided to retire from teaching. My wife and I were teaching relationship workshops, intimacy workshops with some continuum. But after I turned 80, I thought there'd be something poetic about going back and teaching continuum again. So I teach these weekend, 6 hours a day, Saturday and Sunday. And I do one about every 3-4 months. And
wow, that's long. 6 hours? Wow.
Like for a day, in a day. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a workshop, you know?
Yeah. That's a lot of presence. That's good. So, and you do it in person?
Yeah. 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 So, some of my colleagues do Zoom classes. If the listener is interested, go to continuumteachersassociation.com.
I will put that in I'll put a ticker tape in there for you. Yeah.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Simple.
So I want to ask you this. So let's talk about this. When you think about your childhood and art specifically, let's be specific with art. Can you remember the first time you ever made something that you were, I always say that you were proud of. Can you think about that? Looking back, like, were you in school? Were you at home? Was it with crayons? Was it, where were you?
Yeah, that, you see, the extent of the trauma, and when trauma is severe, certain things happen in the brain, like that membrane, that part in the center, the corpus callosum, doesn't grow fully. It can be a little shrunken. The right side of the brain doesn't develop. And specifically in my case, I disappeared into the left side of my brain, into words and fantasy. And, I'm fairly facile with words now. I write and I speak. but picking up a crayon was a nightmare. Wow. I mean, anything that involved that right side of my brain. And even until my early 40s, if I was, for example, and I did this a couple times, I was in a Gestalt therapy training group, and occasionally the leader would pull out the paper and the crayons, and we're going to do some art, and I'd stand up and say, "See you next time."
Ah.
I'd walk out the door. And it was that traumatic an experience for me. Now, if that occurred, man, I'd have so much fun. It might look like a 4-year-old's.
It doesn't matter. That's good. That's a good thing.
Yeah. Right. Right. But it took me decades for that to sink in,
Well, I love that you mentioned that because I love neuroscience and understanding how the brain works and also realizing that the brain is always growing. It's always continuing to grow and change, even in your 80s, right? Yeah. And so you can always grow that back or by pushing it. But what I would encourage you to do from what you just said, I would encourage you to try this sometime after this, but get a newspaper or a magazine or an old book. I want you to cut out words, okay? Just words and collage them. Just move the words around because that's your portal, all right? So you have words is your art.
Yeah, okay? Yeah, yeah.
And you arrange them on a page, get a little 8.5 piece of paper and arrange those words, phrases that resonate with you, and just move them around on the page. And I want you to start with a black page, okay? So get a black sheet of paper when you do that. And move the words around. So, you know, you don't have to cut them out perfectly. In fact, this is not about perfection. You can cut it sloppy. You can rip it out. You can do whatever you want. Just put it on there. And we will come back and see you in like 3 months. You're going to be doing, you know, Picasso and Matisse. You'd be a famous artist.
I remember the answer to your question.
Oh,
as you were talking.
Oh, good, good. Okay, I want to hear it.
The first time that I created art, quote unquote, and felt really good about it. And I was in my upper 30s.
Wow.
And I had gotten through this serious hangup of, you know, the word art, and I'm out the door. I don't do art. That's, you know, not
I've heard it.
Part of my self-image. And I don't remember the context, but I made a collage, you know, with magazine pictures.
Yeah.
And I liked it a lot. I kept it for years and years, you know. That was the first time. I must have been somewhere around 38 years old.
Wow. Yeah. You know, you said a couple things there that I really love. Yes, you said, I don't do that. And it's so funny. In my story, in my book, I talk about not only did I get burned by art when I was young, but I felt like I got burned by God, so to speak, in the sense that I was born gay and I was very passionate, went to church, teaching school. And suddenly I realized, wait a minute, I'm gay. And I'm not included in that at the time, and even more today, I guess, in the Catholic community. You know, I was kind of—
You're Catholic.
Yeah, I was raised Catholic. And so for years, I would say that to people. They would say, but what? And I'd say, I don't do God. You know, just like you just said, I don't do art. And I said those exact words, I don't do God. And you know what my friend said to me? I talk about it in my book. She said, call it by a different name.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, how interesting, maybe instead of calling it art, call it by a different name. Call it collage, or call it, you know, play.
Yeah, that could have very well helped, for sure. I don't have that hang up now.
Yeah.
I would be happy to, you know, being in a group of people, do my 4-year-old piece of art, stand up and proudly display it, you know?
That's wonderful. You know what, Dawn, what I do with a lot of artists, what I try to do in my process is I take them before they learned how to edit that 4-year-old art. See, what happens is we learn to edit our 4-year-old selves and be like everybody else. And so when I teach artists, I want them to realize that there is a unique creative DNA underneath all that. There's a who you are as an artist, and you have to get rid of all that where you're told it should be a perfect line, or it should look like Matisse, or it has to be perfectly balanced. And I want them to go back.
Yeah.
And find that innocence of being a child before they edited it, you know.
And I would imagine, Chris, that a lot can come up emotionally in that process of going back.
Yeah. It is. And you have to be empathetic, like you said. You know, empathy is a big, big tool, you know?
Absolutely.
So that's interesting. That is great. So So let's say if there is someone listening to this and they're an artist and let me do this. I'd like to share this with the listeners. One thing I find frustrating is I have people that'll say, I don't need to do coaching, or I don't need counseling, or I don't need therapy. And I think everybody needs it. You know, how do you encourage someone? Those people, they're just so shut down. Like, I don't need any help. How do you get them? What would you say?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, what comes to me is to ask, can you let love in? If someone that you care about, someone you like, would come up close to you and look into your eyes, could you be there? And if they start telling you how lovely you are, how radiant your eyes are, how they love the energy that's just, can you handle that? can you take it, or are you going to get squirmy? Like, most people get squirmy.
Most people do get squirmy.
Most people get squirmy. And that's, you know, it's about increasing our capacity. And there's still a little bit of a stigma, not nearly as much as 50 years ago, but, you know, something has to be wrong with you to go to therapy. And, you know, I'm saying, look, there are these four pillars of wholeness: your connection, your aliveness in your body, the quality of your flesh. You know, your very flesh should feel a little bit like a wet sponge when you put your hand up against it. You know what a wet sponge feels like?
Yeah. Now, where did I read that in your book? I don't know. Or did I see it? It resonates with me. I feel like maybe I did. Yeah.
And think about that compared to a dry sponge. You know, a sponge that doesn't have any water in it yet. And feel that. How do you want to be? Yeah, you know, how you want your flesh to be? How do you really feel about yourself? Can you stand in front of a group of people and take off all your clothes, emotionally speaking?
I'd have trouble. But that's true. No, you're right. It shouldn't matter.
Here I am. If you can do that, imagine the freedom. Imagine if you can say, yeah, you know, I didn't have sex until I was 28.
And just be vulnerable.
I suffered from terrible shame that I was still a technical virgin at 18.
Yeah.
You know, and like,
I think it's true. Being vulnerable and just realizing,
being vulnerable, being open. And yeah, someone would say, well, why would I want to do that? and my answer is, it's just freedom. You don't have to do that, but you can't. You can't do that.
Yeah.
So you don't have that degree of freedom.
And I love that where you said, let the love in.
Yeah, that's a big one. Mm. That's a big one.
No. So let's go through those real. We have about 5 minutes left, and I want to talk about that. The four pillars you said: somatic, in layman's terms,
just the connection to your body.
Okay.
Just a sense that you're alive in your body, that you can feel it. You know, if you cannot feel that you have legs, you know about them. Conceptually, yeah, you don't have a sense of being grounded, you know, on the ground.
So it's touch with your body and how your body moves, and awareness, body moves, awareness.
Body awareness, how it feels, how vital it is. Okay, that's and one.
Then you have psycho-emotional.
Psycho-emotional, the beliefs that you have about yourself, others, and the world. Is the world safe? You know, do my needs generally get met? Can I be close to somebody? This is a big one. Can I be really close to someone and still feel free? Or do I have to sacrifice my freedom to be close? Can I be really close to someone and trust that they're not going to kick me in the you-know-where? Right? Can I trust that they're not going to hurt me?
Yeah, I love
that. That's the psycho-emotional level. The relational is all the skills that and capacities that we need. They overlap with the psycho-emotional, but I wanted to separate it to emphasize its importance. The capacities we need, like being able to speak from the heart. You know, can I just be with you and speak from my heart without any film of pretense? See what I mean?
Yeah.
Just that it's can I, you know, if you irritate me or push one of my buttons, how long does it take me to let it go and come back to that good vibe between us? You know, can I do it in 30 seconds or do I take 30 days?
Let me try. Push your button.
Of course.
Let's see how long it takes. Yeah, I love that, though. It's true. How fast do you heal from it? How fast do you come back? How fast do you get to center? You know?
Yeah.
And I love the last one. Spiritual.
Yeah. I'm a recovering Catholic.
Oh, are you?
As are you. And I went through my phases of agnosticism and atheism. And then I took psychedelics in graduate school back in 1968. And I couldn't say I was an atheist anymore. I didn't know anything beyond that, but there's something that I don't know about. And then, you know, subsequent life experiences confirmed for me that I am part of something beyond my egoic sense of self.
Yeah.
And many different experiences, that would be a whole other 45 minutes of conversation, but many experiences, including surviving a serious heart attack, major heart attack, big one, not a tiny one, big one, and not seeing a cardiologist for 3 months, and my heart is completely normal still.
You know,
that experiences like that.
I can't remember the psychedelics. There's something on, I think it's on Prime or Netflix. There's a whole documentary on it, and it's based on a book. Can you remember the name of the book? There's a book about the exploration of psychedelics and the history of them.
Changing Your Mind by
Yes, I think I even have it somewhere. Changing Your Mind. I want to share that with the listeners because it's an amazing book. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
And if you don't like to read, if you don't like to read it, you can watch it. You know.
Yeah.
You can watch
it. There you go.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, when we talk about psychedelics, we do need to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if the children and adolescents listening to this, it is not something you play with.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that's done in a very safe, serious setting. Understanding all the elements about it. You don't just go to a party and pop some psilocybin or LSD, even ecstasy. I mean, best to do that under very intelligent circumstances.
Yeah, and you'll get that one from watching the documentary, how they have a guide with you, and it's very careful, and it's not something you want to play around with. But it's interesting that it does make you supposedly gain a connection to all that is.
Yeah. That's the essence of spirituality, is that connection to all there is.
Well, is there anything else you'd want to share with our listeners? We went a little smidge long there, but this was fun. So is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
Just an encouragement to stay on the journey, or if you haven't yet, embark on it.
Oh,
go for it.
I love it. And like I said, this book, your book, Healing the Wounds of Childhood and Culture, it definitely has a lot of data. If you're like me and you're a lifelong learner and you just love to get down and read and get references about where to go from here, you know, it's a good book, and I highly encourage it. So this has been a joy, Don. I really have had fun.
Me too, for sure. Yeah.
And there's a lot we didn't cover, but you know, like I said, we only have one episode. But anyway, thank you.
With me next year. We'll do it again.
We will. So thank you again.
My pleasure.
Listeners, thank you for listening to the Spiritual Artist Podcast. Please, please follow this channel on YouTube so you'll get updates when new interviews come out, or you can follow me on any of the major podcast channels. I do have a couple retreat openings left for the spring retreat, the Spiritual Artist Retreat in April. And I have scheduled one that will take place in November in Dallas. And you can come to that retreat as well. And you can collage or cut out words or do whatever you want with us on the Spiritual Artist Retreat. So thank you and have a great day. Thanks again for listening to the Spiritual Artist Podcast. Whether you're watching this show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or iHeartRadio, make sure you choose the subscribe button so that you will receive updates when new segments are released. Most importantly, be still, listen, and know that you are a spiritual artist.